This is a reading of a fragment or a chapter from René Descartes' Discourse on Method. And it is interesting because he uses the analogy of city planning and buildings as a sort of way into describing two different, let's say, modes of thought. And then the end of the essay then talks about how he reasons or approaches a problem. And I think many of the points he makes in this text can be applied to architecture. So René Descartes, Discourse on Method, Part 2. I was then in Germany, where the occasion of the wars which are not yet over there had called me, and I was returning to the army from the coronation of the emperor. The onset of winter detained me in quarters where, finding no conversation to divert me, and fortunately having no worries or passions to trouble me, I remained for an entire day shut up by myself in a stove-heated room, where I was completely free to converse with myself about my thoughts. Among them, one of the first was that it occurred to me to consider that there is often not so much perfection in works composed of many pieces and made by the hands of various master craftsmen as there is in those works on which but a single individual has worked. Thus, one sees that buildings undertaken and completed by a single architect are usually more attractive and better ordered than those which many architects have tried to patch up by using old walls that had been built for other purposes. Thus, those ancient cities that were once mere villages and in the course of time have become large towns are usually so poorly laid out compared to those well-ordered places that an engineer traces out on a vacant plane as it suits his fancy, that even though upon considering each building one by one in the former sort, one often finds as much, if not more, art than one finds in those of the latter sort, still, upon seeing how the buildings are arranged, here a large one, there a small one, and how they make the streets crooked and uneven, one would say that it is chance rather than the will of some men using reason that has arranged them thus. And if one considers that there have nevertheless always been officials responsible for seeing that private buildings contribute to the attractiveness of public areas, one will well understand that it's difficult to make things that are very finely crafted by laboring only on the works of others. Thus, I imagine that peoples who, having once been half savages and having been civilized only little by little, may have made their laws only to the extent that the inconvenience due to crimes and quarrels had forced them to do so, could not be as well ordered as those who, from the very beginning of their coming together, have followed the fundamental precepts of some prudent legislation. Likewise, it is quite certain that the state of the true religion, whose ordinances were made by God alone, must be incomparably better ordered than those of all others. And speaking of things human, I believe that if Sparta was at one time very flourishing, this was not because of the goodness of each one of its laws taken by itself, seeing that many of them were very strange and even contrary to good morals, but because, having been devised by a single individual, they all tended toward the same end. And thus I thought that book learning, at least the kind whose reasonings are merely probable and that do not have any demonstrations, having been composed and enlarged little by little from the opinions of many different persons, does not draw nearly so close to the truth as the simple reasonings of a man of good sense can naturally make about the things he encounters. And thus, too, I thought that because we were all children before being men, and because for a long time it was necessary for us to be governed by our appetites and our teachers, which were frequently in conflict with one another, and of which perhaps neither always gave us the best advice, it is nearly impossible for our judgments to be as pure or as solid as they would have been if we had had the full use of our reason from the moment of our birth, and if we had always been guided by it alone. It is true that we never see anyone pulling down all the houses in a city for the sole purpose of rebuilding them in a different style and of making the streets more attractive. But one does see very well that many people tear down their old houses in order to rebuild them, and that in some cases they're even forced to do so when the houses are in danger of collapsing and when the foundations are not very secure. This example persuaded me that it would not really be at all reasonable for a single individual to plan to reform a state by changing everything in it from the foundations up and by toppling it in order to set it up again. Nor even also to reform the body of the sciences or the order established in the schools for teaching them, but that, as regards to all opinions to which I had until now given credence, I could not do better than to try to get rid of them once and for all in order to replace them later on, either with other ones that are better or even with the same ones once I had reconciled them to the norms of reason. And I firmly believe that by this means I would succeed in conducting my life much better than if I were to build only upon the old foundations, and if I were to rely only on the principles of which I had allowed myself to be persuaded in my youth, without ever having examined whether they were true. For although I noticed various difficulties in this undertaking, still they were not irredeemable, nor they were not irremediable, nor were they comparable to those difficulties occurring in the reform of the least things that affect the public. These great bodies are too difficult to raise up once they've been knocked down, and even to hold up once they have been shaken, and their fall can only be very violent. Moreover, as to their imperfections, if they have any, and the mere fact of the diversity that exists among them suffices to assure one that many do have imperfections, custom has doubtless greatly mitigated them, as has even prevented or imperceptibly corrected many of them, against which prudence could not provide so well. And finally, these imperfections are almost always more tolerable than changing them would be. Similarly, the great roads that wind through the mountains little by little become so smooth and so convenient by dint of being frequently used that it's much better to follow them than to try to make a more direct route by climbing over rocks and descending into the bottom of precipices. That is why I could in no way approve of these troublemaking and restless personalities who, called neither by their birth nor by their fortune to manage public affairs, are forever coming up with an idea for some new reform in this matter. And if I thought there were in this writing the slightest thing by means of which one might suspect me of such folly, I would be very sorry to permit its publication. My plan has never gone beyond trying to reform my own thoughts and building upon a foundation which is completely my own. And if my work having pleased me sufficiently, and if my work having pleased me sufficiently, I here show you a model of it. It is not for the reason that I would wish to advise anyone to imitate it. Perhaps those with whom God has better shared his graces will have more lofty plans, but I fear that even this one here may already be too daring for many. The single resolution to rid oneself of all the opinions to which one has hitherto given credence is not an example that everyone ought to follow, and the world consists almost exclusively of two kinds of minds for whom it is not at all suitable. First, there are those who, believing themselves more capable than they are unable to avoid being hasty in their judgments or to have enough patience to conduct all their thoughts in an orderly manner. As a result, if they have once taken the liberty of doubting the principles that they have accepted and of straying from the common path, they would never keep to the path one must take in order to go in a more straightforward direction, and they would remain lost all their lives. Second are those who have enough reason or modesty to judge that they are less capable of distinguishing the true from the false than certain others by whom they can be instructed. They should content themselves more with following the opinions of those than with looking for better ones themselves. As for myself, I would unquestionably have been counted among those latter persons if I had always had only one master, or if I had not known at all the differences that have always existed among the opinions of the most learned. But I had learned in my college days that one cannot imagine anything so strange or so little believable that it has not been said by one of the philosophers. And since then, I had recognized in my travels that all those who have sentiments quite contrary to our own are not for that reason barbarians or savages, but that many of them use their reason as much as or more than we do. And I considered how one of the same, and I considered how one and the same man with with the very same mind, were he brought up from infancy among the French or the Germans, would become different from what he would have had he always lived among the Chinese or the cannibals, and how even down to the styles of our clothing, the same thing that pleased us 10 years ago, and that perhaps will again please us 10 years hence, now seems to us extravagant and ridiculous. Thus, it is more custom and example that persuades us than any certain knowledge, and yet the majority opinion is worthless as a proof of truths that are at all difficult to discover, since it is much more likely that one man would have found them than a whole multitude of people. Hence, I could not choose anyone whose opinions seemed to me should be preferred over those of the others, and I found myself, as it were, constrained to try to guide myself on my own. But like a man who walks alone and in the dark, I resolved to go so slowly and to use so much circumspection in all things that if I advanced only very slightly, at least I would effectively keep myself from falling. Nor did I want to begin to reject totally any of the opinions that had once been able to slip into my head without having been introduced there by reason, until I had first spent sufficient time planning the work I was undertaking and seeking the true method for arriving at the knowledge of everything of which my mind would be capable. When I was younger, I had studied among the parts of philosophy a little logic and some. And among those of mathematics, a bit of geometrical analysis and algebra, three arts or sciences that it seemed ought to contribute something to my plan. But in examining them, I noticed that in the case of logic, the syllogisms of the greater part of its other lessons served more to explain to someone else the things one knows, or even, like the art of Lully, to speak without judgment concerning matters about which one is ignorant, than to learn them. And although, in effect, it might well contain many very true and very good precepts, nevertheless, there are so many others mixed up with them that are either harmful or superfluous that it is almost as difficult to separate the latter precepts from the former as it is to draw a Diana or a Minerva from a block of marble that has not yet been honed. Then, as to the analysis of the ancients and the algebra of the moderns, apart from the fact that they apply only to very abstract matters, it seemed to be of no use. The former is always so closely tied to the consideration of figures that it cannot exercise the understanding without greatly fatiguing the imagination. And in the case of the latter, one is so subjected to certain rules and to certain symbols that out of it there results a confused and obscure art that encumbers the mind rather than a science that cultivates it. That is why I thought it necessary to search for some other method embracing the advantages of these three, yet free from their defects. And since the multiplicity of laws often provides excuses for vices, so that a state is much better ruled when it has but very few laws and when these are very strictly observed, Likewise, in place of the large number of precepts of which logic is composed, I believed that the following four rules would be sufficient for me, provided I made a firm and constant resolution not even once to fail to observe them. The first was never to accept anything as true that I did not plainly know to be such, that is to say, carefully to avoid hasty judgments and prejudice, and to include nothing more in my judgments than what presented itself to my mind so clearly and so distinctly that I had no occasion to call it into doubt. The second, to divide each of the difficulties I would examine into as many parts as possible and as was required in order better to resolve them. The third, to conduct my thoughts in an orderly fashion by commencing with those objects that are simplest and easiest to know, in order to ascend little by little, as by degrees, to the knowledge of the most composite things, and by supposing in order even among those things that do not naturally precede one another. And in the last, everywhere to make my enumerations so complete and reviews so general that I was assured of having omitted nothing. Those long chains of utterly simple and easy reasonings that geometers commonly use to arrive at their most difficult demonstrations had given me occasion to imagine that all the things that can fall within human knowledge follow from one another in the same way, and that provided only that one abstain from accepting any of them as true that is not true, and that one always adheres to the order one must follow in deducing the ones from the others, there cannot be any that are so remote that they are not eventually reached, nor so hidden that they are not discovered. And I was not very worried about trying to find out which of them it would be necessary to begin with, for I already knew that it was with the simplest and easiest to know. And considering that of all those who have hitherto searched for the truth in the sciences, only mathematicians have been able to find any demonstrations, that is to say, certain and evident reasonings, I did not at all doubt that it was with these same things that they had examined that I should begin. Although I expected from them no other utility but that they would accustom my mind to nourish itself on truths and not to be content with false reasonings. But it was not my plan on that account to try to learn all those particular sciences commonly called mathematical, and seeing that, even though their objects differed, these sciences did not cease to be all in accord with one another, in considering nothing but the various relations or proportions which are found in their objects. I thought it would be more worthwhile for me to examine only these proportions in general, and to suppose them to be only in subjects that would help me to make the knowledge of them easier, and without at the same time in any way restricting them to those subjects, so that later I would apply them all the better to everything else to which they might pertain. Then, having noted that, in order to know these proportions, I would sometimes need to consider each of them individually, and sometimes only to keep them in mind or to grasp many of them together. I thought that in order to better consider them in particular, I ought to suppose them to be relations between lines, since I found nothing more simple or nothing that I could represent more distinctly to my imagination and to my senses. But that in order to keep them in my mind or to grasp many of them together, I would have to explicate them by means of certain symbols, the briefest ones possible, and that by this means I would be borrowing all that is best in geometrical analysis and algebra, and correcting all the defects of the one by means of the other. In fact, I dare say the strict adherence to these few precepts I had chosen gave me such faculty for disentangling all the questions to which these two sciences extend, that in the 2 or 3 months I spent examining them having begun with the simplest and most general, and each truth that I found being a rule that later helped me to find others, not only did I arrive at a solution of many problems that I had previously judged very difficult, but also it seemed to me toward the end that even in those instances where I was ignorant, I could determine by what means and how far it was possible to resolve them. In this, perhaps I shall not seem to you to be too vain if you will consider that there being but one truth with respect to each thing, whoever finds this truth knows as much about a thing as can be known, and that, for example, if a child who has been instructed in arithmetic has made an addition following its rules, he can be assured of having found everything regarding the sum he was examining that the human mind would know how to find. For ultimately, the method that teaches one to follow the true order and to enumerate exactly all the circumstances of which one is seeking contains everything that gives certainty to the rules of arithmetic. But what pleased me most about this method was that by means of it, I was assured of using my reason in everything, if not perfectly, at least as well as it was in my power. And in addition that I felt, and in addition that I felt that in practicing this method, my mind was little by little getting into the habit of conceiving its objects more rigorously and more distinctly, and that not having restricted the method to any particular subject matter, I promised myself to apply it as usefully to the problems of the other sciences as I had to those of algebra. Not that on this account I would have dared at the outset to undertake an examination of all the problems that presented themselves, for that would itself have been contrary to the order prescribed by the method. But having noted that the principles of these sciences must all be derived from philosophy, in which I did not yet find any that were certain, I thought that it was necessary for me, first of all, to try to establish some there, and that by being the most important thing in the world and the thing in which hasty judgment and prejudice were most so to most to were most to feared, I should not try to accomplish that objective until I had reached a much more mature age than that of merely 23, which I was then, and until I had first spent a great deal of time preparing myself for it, as much in rooting out all from my mind or all the wrong opinions that I had accepted before that time, as in accumulating many experiences in order for them later to be subject matter of my reasonings, and in always practicing this method I had prescribed for myself, so as to strengthen myself more and more in its use.